Hello, everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you're joining us from. Welcome to the School of Mary Live Cenacle Series. This is the Crossing the Exile series, where we methodically take a look at Jesus, sort of packing our suitcase, filling our knapsack, our backpack with what's needed as he gifts us and sends us out. So it's so beautiful. And to take the time to recognize what he's putting in our backpack, because he's frugal, and he's only going to pack for us what we need. So it's good to pay attention to what we need. Speaking of that, I'm going to pay attention to the opening prayer. It'll be a supplication taken from the Virgin Mary in the Kingdom, Day 31, the Virgin Mary's Assumption into Heaven. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. My dear Heavenly Mother, I am back in your maternal arms. And as I look at you, a sweet smile appears on your pierced lips. Today you are rejoicing, and it seems as if you wish to confide something yet more surprising to me, your child. O Holy Mother, I entreat you to touch my mind and purify my heart with your maternal hands so that I may understand your holy lessons and put them into practice. All this we ask through Christ our Lord. Amen. In the name of the Father and of the Son. The Holy Spirit, amen. I bring in Maureen. Maureen's here. Yay. All right.
Hi, Peter. Hi, everybody.
So good to see you.
Good to be here.
This is great. You know, I love, again, when she says, Louise says to Our Lady, I know you wish to confide something yet more surprising. You're going to divulge another truth. You're going to tell me another secret. And when we think about secrets, we think about the modern vernacular. And the secret's not a really good thing in most instances. It's sort of painful in one way or the other. But the language of heaven is not always exactly the vernacular as described by the Webster's Dictionary. Again, God is trying to take divine realities and sort of place them into human terms, and it doesn't quite fit all the time. But Our Lady, again, giving us this insight, she explains what is meant by a secret when it comes to what does it mean in the language of heaven. And she does that also in the Virgin Mary in the Kingdom, meditation number one. Our Blessed Mother states, quote, "For a secret is a need of the heart, which is irresistibly revealed to those capable of understanding," end quote. So not only is it not nefarious, not good, it's a humble compliment that our Blessed Lord, our Blessed Lady would not be divulging these truths to us unless they felt we were, quote, capable of understanding. So let's not let them down. I'm afraid of that every single day. But again, it's all here. It's all so beautiful. So again, I bring up the material, Maureen. And again, I like that. I was just thinking about that today. You know, we are all gifted and we're all sent. But Crossing the Exile in volume two that we're going through right now methodically, in essence, Jesus is really packing our backpack. He really is. He's stuffing our suitcase, not with frivolous things, but just with everything we need. So, again, so great to just pay attention on what kind of disposition we must have, how we must respond to certain instances, situations, and it's all here. That's what's so beautiful about this. The date's wrong on that, but I'm going to bring us up to, I don't know. Maybe we won't repeat that right now. I also want to save Maureen some time at the end because we haven't had enough time to field any questions or any comments. Mm-hmm. Actually, maybe at the end is too late. It's sort of a thought past your mind. So maybe if you have something you want to interject, sort of real time, you know, raise your hand. I mean, not necessarily the physical raising of the hand, but I think you can raise your, is there a raise hand button or icon somewhere on the bottom there where you can just like raise your hand? Yeah. So if you raise hand there, I can see, oh yeah, there we go. Angelica. So I can see it, and then I can call on you, because if I'm waiting for something like this, and poor Frank, well, a friend of mine, one day about a year ago, I said, "Yeah, raise your hand if you have anything you want to say." And after the cynical, he was like, "Pete, what's wrong? I was raising my hand the whole time." I said, "I didn't see it." So there was like 150 people on, and he was going like this, and I just couldn't see it. But we resolved that. Maureen,
yes.
Jesus packing our bag. Can you imagine that? And he's doing it personally for each and every one of us. That's incredible. That's extraordinary. And we're coming up on, okay. We handled last week, we talked about humility is the anchor of peace. We talked about Jesus saying that humility is the greatest ingredient in oh, I'm sorry, confidence is the greatest ingredient in humility. And it was just he talks about the annihilation of ourselves, to be annihilated, not necessarily, again, this is the one was translated. It doesn't mean to be obliterated, blown up so that we don't, that the free will doesn't exist, though it's always going to be there, but sort of it's taken out of the way. So again, we have to metaphorically look at some of these. And again, it's and you have to take it also in the full context. I'd like to mention something about that maybe a little later on, about taking it in the full context, because a lot of times I'm just reading that one liner. Sometimes it helps, but sometimes it may not be as clear as it ought to be. But again, I'll touch on that if we have time a bit later. So we're beginning here, and this is basically how Jesus kept Louisa concealed in his love. And let me bring the pointer out, Maureen. And I don't think we have a lot of stops here, but we could, again, if anyone would like to add something or have their voice heard, just raise your hand. Not physically, but even physically, I think with a small group, I can probably see that. But it's much better if I see the yellow hand up there, I can see that much better. Okay, so let me bring up this pointer.
Okay, April 5th, 1899. How Jesus keeps her concealed in his love. My soul continued in its annihilation and fear of losing sweet Jesus, when in one instant he made himself seen all of a sudden and told me, I keep you in the shadow of my charity. And since a shadow penetrates everywhere, my love keeps you concealed everywhere and in everything. What do you fear then? How can I leave you while I keep you so sunken within my love?
So here again, Luis is, I guess, practicing that, out of sight, out of mind. If you left me, you must not love me anymore. You must have abandoned me. You must have changed your mind. Oh, she goes through all these different, possible scenarios as to why Jesus left her. But we know, again, he's comforting her. He's saying, you're always with me. You're everywhere in everything. And he talks about, remember the past lessons too, two things that come to mind that when he leaves her, number one, he says when he has to chastise, he has to leave her because she doesn't want anyone to suffer. And she's, I guess, so compelling and she moves God so much that he'd rather not be around her because he knows he has to invoke this tough love, this chastisement in order to bring people back. Again, if it's, we leave it be, they perhaps go to hell. But if God intervenes and he crosses a little bit of a hardship here, it might set a different course of sail. And of course, the soul may be saved forever. So he has to do this. So that's one essence I remember when he leaves her. The second time I remember him talking about this, and this is really great. He talks about the privation of when he leaves, like the martyrdom of how she feels, how devastating it is, how she loses her life, her breath, metaphorically. But he does that in order to give her opportunity to redouble her love for him, thus filling her voids, the bad voids, more quickly, because he says somewhere else that all of those voids must be filled before you can enter into heaven. So we have the two voids, the one void, the good void that Adam was given, that huge space in our soul that is formed or given to us to contain God, which is the most elastic thing there is, because again, God is can never be put into a room. So that void is good. That's there to house God. The other voids that he's talking about here are those quote missed opportunities to give glory and honor to God on the level of God. And that's all those times when we've perhaps been ungrateful, lacked gratitude. Done other things that was not pleasing to our Lord, and again did not keep him first. The 10 lepers, one came back. Weren't there 10? Where are the other nine? Yeah, that type of thing. So the privation is again the martyrdom allows Luisa to suffer. To again, suffer is only beneficial and has value if it's suffering with and through Jesus. To suffer, just to suffer, has no value, and he speaks about that also here, also in the City of God. So I think that's really important. So again, those are the two things but again, see, Louisa, he had to make God. I mean, God was everything to Louisa, but by putting her in bed, keeping people away from her, God was everything. I mean, every moment, if she didn't see him, she was like, not petrified, but she was just uneasy. And this was a suffering. This was a great suffering for her. And again, this is the martyrdom of martyrdoms. In that suffering, she never lost love, never lost affection, never lost her desire to do what he says. Again, she talked back a couple of times, like, it's very difficult to deal with you, Jesus. I like when she plays with him like that. But so all these things, they come to the surface, and we see her suffering. Now, we have different forms of privation, perhaps. Maybe God allows different things in our lives, financial hardships, sometimes health issues. Again, this is the mystery behind his permissible will. He doesn't want us to be sick. He doesn't want us to be poor. But he'll allow the natural order in most instances just to play itself out, which again, since the fall of nature, is negative for the vast majority of people. I mean, we're drifting and drifting, and our batteries are running low. And that's why the food sources are the food quality is diminishing because the nutrients in the soil. Again, God, we heard Father Celso talk about this, that God had identified, it's going to be 6,000 years. I'll give enough nutrients in the soil for crops to be beneficial for those 6,000 years, because then they won't need that. It'll be a new era. It'll be a new way to start, and we won't have this this I guess this thorny type of bush anymore. So if that explains anything. So again, any other? Can you remember any other situations, Maureen, when Jesus talked about privation or used privation for good? I can't.
The only ones I can think of are what you said, Peter. Of course, when we start, well, later I'll think of it when I'm laying down in bed tonight. I go, oh yeah, I remember that one. Why
Well,
couldn't I
you're better than me.
remember
I won't even.
it
I won't remember it, but you will.
when
Well,
I
jot it
needed
down, maybe. Maybe jot
it?
it down and send me an email, because I'd like to know. I mean, I think there are other situations. I just don't remember them. But again, but he's comforting her also, and when he tells her that how much he loves her, and that. He's talking about the shadow again, since it penetrates everywhere. He's talking to us also, and he uses the shadow a couple times. If you remember the series, The Nothingness of the Soul, he talks about, and Jesus says that we are nothing but a shadow, and that's something that you may want to contemplate or meditate on for a bit. Think about a shadow. It exists. It's real. Right? It's tangible, but it needs something in order to cause it. So if we're nothing but a shadow, let's say Jesus, when he's not there, there's no shadow. Without God, we don't exist. God is there. There's a shadow. And that shadow hopefully will follow. We're nothing but a shadow. And that's okay, because we're in the backdrop or the extension of God, which is beautiful. But without him, we're nothing. So how can you be everything and nothing at the same time? Well, again, we're everything when we're with God, to God, and we're nothing because we really don't exist. We really don't exist without God, not in the way of being an actual child of God, in the way that he wants his paternity back. So I just think that's incredible, the way he explains, again, to what he sent to us. That I keep you in the shadow of my charity. And since the shadow penetrates everywhere, see, you can't really, I mean, shadow goes anywhere. It can be on any object. There's nothing that can immune it to it, right? Think about it. Shadow goes anywhere. Rain could be, as long as you have enough light. Snow, maybe, as long as you have enough light. It's interesting. I know for a fact that when everyone else meditates on that, you're going to get something much more startling than what I did. But I just scratched the surface. But there's so much there, and that goes for everything in the divine will. What you're going to see, God is going to uniquely present it to you in that way that he probably will not to any other person. And even if he did in the same way, the response would not be exactly the same, because we're all and we've got different histories, different dispositions, different experiences, and all of that cultivates our response, at least when we're living in the world or of the world. Interesting. Any other thoughts on that, Maureen?
No, not right now. Nope.
Keep you so sunken within my love. Okay.
While Jesus was saying this, I wanted to ask him why he was not making himself seen as usual, but Jesus disappeared from me immediately and did not give me the time to tell him even one word. Oh God, what pain.
Guy was smart. Let me get out of here before she started asking me some questions. Because again, this had to, I think this had to permeate with Louisa. She had to masticate this. She had to chew on this. And she had to think about this. Because she's feeling one way, God's telling her the other way. You know, where is she going to? I mean, who's she gonna, what's she gonna align herself with? Her thoughts? The way she feels, or what God is presenting. He's not going to tell us something that's not true. He's not going to flatter us like maybe we would do. He's going to tell us the truth. And that's so beautiful. Everything he says is a truth. And it's a divine truth. Speaking about this privation, again, this was not in volume two. I don't know where this is from. I didn't put a volume there. Well, based on the date, I can look it up, but probably five, I would think. But anyway, I'll double check this. But if you look up just the date and put the date, I'm sure you can get the volume online. It's April 21st, 1960. This talks about this privation that Jesus allows Louisa to experience, and how Louisa suffers. This is really good, right?
April 21st, 1916, the privation of Jesus, which Louisa suffers. I continue my most bitter days. I feel that someday Jesus may not even come in passing. And in my pain, I keep repeating, Jesus, don't do this to me. If you don't want to speak, so be it. If you don't want to give me the gift of your charisms, fiat. But not coming at all? Not this. You know that it would cost me my life, and that my very nature, with left without you until evening, would melt.
Okay, that says a lot. And I just got a chat too from, is it Mary from California? This is volume 11. Thank you, Mary, so for doing that work for me. So I'll just put this in volume 11. Oops. So that packs a whole punch there too, Maureen. The reason why I wanted to just read this sentence, you don't want to give me the gift of your charisms, fiat. But not coming at all, not this. See how Luis's importance of not what she gets, but just being with Jesus. And again, this could be a subtle lesson to all of us for a call to adoration, for a call to a deeper understanding and experience of the Mass. So again, a lot of things that God wants to speak to us on all these. Again, this he's using our vernacular to bring this language of heaven, which is so, it's like volumes behind each and every word that I'm incapable of understanding. But again, each of us are going to get it in a slightly different way. All the same, be one truth, but just in a slightly different variation of color, say, for example. Okay, so Maureen, I wanted to just hit that because I think it's important. Now we're going to jump down to the real stuff, the new stuff for today. And this is here.
Volume 13, October 18th, 1921. The disturbance of the soul is the night that prevents the Son of Jesus from rising. Disturbance is nothing other than lack of abandonment in God. I spent a day distracted because of a few things I heard, which it is not necessary here to say, and also a little disturbed. And as much as I tried, I could not free myself. So for the entire day, I did not see my sweet Jesus, the life of my soul, as if the disturbance were a veil which, placing itself between me and him, prevented me from being able to see him.
Okay, so now she's describing what this is like, what this pain is. This is really painful. God is everything to her. It's not just like he should be to each and every one of us, but again, in her situation, this is everything to her, and it's tormenting her in a way. And this had to be hard for Jesus too to see this because he loves Louisa so much. But again, he had to go. This is similar again. I'm not putting her on the same page as the Blessed Mother, but the circumstances differ is a little similar because, for example, I think it was in the City of God, Blessed Mary Agreda, where Jesus goes to the Father to ask if Blessed Mary could be spared some of the pain and suffering she's going to experience. And the Father denied the Son's request because he said something to the extent where she must experience this to be the complete and total mother that she's going to be for all of mankind. So again, what Louise is experiencing here, she doesn't understand it, but again, it's a greater good. Just like God's mysterious permissive will is a mystery, but everything there that may appear to be bad at some point in time of our lives, all the instances we went through, God, for all intents and purposes, create a greater good out of it. And we just have to, sometimes we can trace it, sometimes we can't. But everything we did that wasn't pleasant in the past was like being on a bumper car and hitting the wall. Great thing about hitting the wall is it sends you back into the field again in a different direction, perhaps to hit another wall. But so all of us can go back and say, well, this is the worst time in my life. But then we have to think about it honestly and say, okay, if God's permissible will didn't allow that, would we be here today if that didn't happen? Probably the answer is no, we wouldn't be here today because that had to happen so that we could be directed to a different way. I mean, and again, we can trace that. And I think each of us can be, I think that could lift our spirits if we think about it, because then, and that would take us forward too. That next time we're in a situation that doesn't look good, just sit back and say, okay, Lord, I don't know how you're going to use this for a greater good, but I know you will. Again, I think he gives us that confidence. Each and every day that we experience his mercy and his love. Anything else, Maureen?
Well, I know that when you're on the cross, you can you're transparent. Your weaknesses show up, and even though we don't want that, when it's past, you say, "Oh, that was good." Not when you're going through it, but in hindsight, you go, "Oh, yeah, I can see why God allowed that to happen, because it opened myself to myself." And you probably don't even want that happening just once in your life, but many times. And then as you grow, you see the benefit of it. And you say, this too shall pass.
Yeah, no, that's a great point because if we don't, I mean, I'm thinking about now when Jesus says the two the greatest things I can do is give you a greater knowledge of who I am and who you are. So let's just take who we are. So by God exposing or placing this light on our deficiencies, our weaknesses, our brokenness, where we need work, gives us an opportunity to sort of centralize our efforts in that area. I mean, maybe it's a full blanket. Everything needs to be worked on. That's probably the case with me. But so that's a good thing. So, I mean, how else can we work on our things unless we identify them? And we don't even have to identify them because God's doing it for us. So he's sort of shining a light. And I think that's a really good thing. I think if, again, we know where our weaknesses are, we know what we have to work on. And I think that's, if not half, if
Yeah,
not three quarters of the battle.
it's a blessing. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Okay. Then, late at night, my mind, tired, calmed itself, and my lovable Jesus, as if he were waiting, made himself seen and sorrowful, told me, "My daughter, today, with your disturbance, you have prevented the sun of my person from rising in you. Disturbance is cloud between me and you, which prevents the rays from descending in you. And if the rays do not descend, how can you see the sun? If you knew what it means not to let my sun rise, and what great harm this is for you and for the whole world, you would well be attentive never to trouble yourself."
They're again speaking metaphorically. And I think explaining to Louisa and to us that many times this chain of communication or connection with God is broken by us. Maybe not intentional, but I mean, she's to be disturbed. In fact, even somewhere in the volumes, if you remember, Maureen, Jesus says one of the great tests to know if we're journeying or living in that divine will, to whatever extent we are, is that immutability, not that vacillation, that euphoric one moment and that upset and you're doing negative things later. That vacillation, constancy, he says, is one of the signs that we are living in the divine will, to whatever, again, whatever extent, wherever we are, because every situation really is a fiat, unless we're intentionally doing something wrong. Of course, that can't be a fiat. God doesn't want your fiat in that respect. But anything that occurs to us, again, is permissible will we cannot understand. And we would take our entire life trying to understand it. We would miss this entire journey. So we'll get back to packing our bags, though.
In fact, it is always nighttime for disturbed souls, and at night the sun does not rise. On the other hand, it is always daylight for the peaceful ones, and at whatever hour my sun wants to rise, the soul is always ready to receive the good of my coming.
I don't think there's anything I can comment on. I mean, that's very clear. But it reminds me of a situation like, for example, if somebody, if you've ever been in the company of someone and they're really thinking, something's really heavy on their mind, they're thinking about it, and you're trying to have a conversation, and then they just say, huh? Well, what'd you say? Because they were just so focused in what they were doing that they missed everything you said. And again, not intentionally. And again, now we're talking about the presence of God. So if we're allowing this communication to be broken because of what we're feeling or what we're thinking about, or allowing this to bother us or that to bother us. Again, great, great advice, great lesson for this journey. Again, as we go out, we're going to have those rainy days. We're going to have those bumpy days. We're going to have those days we have to climb hills. Again, metaphorically, we're going to have to swim oceans. We're going to have to be prepared for this, or even not be prepared, but just sort of go with the flow. So he again, he's helping us plan our trip, our journey through the exile, knowing that there's going to be uncertainty, but everything's almost predictable. What we're going to go through, the good days, the bad days, the painful days, the joyous days. Then this is a great explanation to close off this volume 13.
Peter, in that last sentence, where Jesus says, okay, he says, on the other hand, it is always daylight for the peaceful ones. And at whatever hour my sun wants to rise, the soul is always ready. I thought of that as, you don't always feel his presence, or he decides when to give you those warm fuzzies or to feel his presence, but it's not always there. And how it takes faith to know that he's still present, even though we don't feel it. Or that's how I took that. It's because he says, and whatever hour my son wants to rise. So it's up to him when it's going to rise, and we just wait. It says the soul is always ready to receive the good of my coming. So we always have to be ready, and then he decides when he's going to come. But I guess it's like the virgins and their oil, that kind of thing. We wait in joyful hope and knowing that even if we don't see him, hear him, or whatever, he's here, and we'll eventually feel it or we'll know it, in a maybe in a human way. But yeah, we just have to be patient. And whenever time he wants the sun to rise, that really touched me.
No, I like that. I like what you said there too. And I think, again, I think that takes some preparation too
Oh, yeah. Oh,
on our
gosh.
part.
A lot of
Again,
practice.
yeah. And again, I had a really silly analogy, but it's almost like, Jesus says, I want you to play in my sandbox. So he brings us to the sandbox, and he has this, I guess, this bucket loader, dump a whole pile of sand. Well, if there's just a pile of sand in this sandbox, that's not a lot of fun. You have like one hill and that's it, and the rest of the sandbox is empty. So God, I think, is asking us to do some excavating there with our hands and smooth out the sand, fill the sandbox, so that now he can place the toys, especially if we're a child. You can't play with dirt on the ground with just one pile of sand. So he's looking for us to help sort of manicure the field a bit. And that's within our realm of possibility. He's given us hands, he's given us feet, he's given us eyes, he's given us ears to do that. So again, the work is not really hard. He's not saying it has to be done tomorrow or today, but he says the sooner you start it, the quicker you'll be finished, and then I can start to give you what you need. And again, that's part of this journey also. On the radio with Ken earlier today at 5 o'clock, we talked about this gift of the divine will, because again, it is a gift. This is all about giving. And we've always heard, and this is a true statement, I think we can all attest to this, it's better to give than to receive. I think we've all experienced that. That's a great feeling to give. So think about this. The divine will is all about giving. God gives us the opportunity. We give our fiat. God gives us gifts. We accept the gifts and give the gifts back to God on the level of God. God then gives us grace for all of eternity. So it's a reciprocal essence of love all through giving. We don't even recognize the receiving. We just focus on the giving. Because when we receive, the next thing we're doing is we're giving. But we're benefiting every time we receive without recognizing the receipt of it. So what I'm trying to say is the importance is not in receiving, it's in the giving. But in the giving, we do receive. So it's all here. And to give it back to God on the level of God, he gives us that opportunity too. If he gives us this gift on loan as we're journeying for that, usually for that one specific act, it could be something insignificant like a blink of the eye, or it could be something more substantial. He's giving us that opportunity to do that act in the eternal now. And then that we'll live in on for perpetuity. What degree it will affect all souls, past, present, future, that is a mystery. We don't know that. There's nowhere in the writings, no one's really commented on that. But we do know that the gift on loan and that act, Brother Nuzzi's clarified this, that act done in it is an act done in the divine will. And that's just so spectacular because,
I
again,
love that.
yeah. And
That's great.
what do you need? What do you need to do to be in a position to receive this? Jesus says, in the state of grace. Father Nuzzi says, in the splendor of creation. Because he goes into a lot of different mystics, Conchita and others. He basically says it's apparent. It's a word, I think, a word he uses that anyone in the state of grace can enter. Of course, I can't find it right now. Anyone in the state of grace can receive this gift, and that's true. That's true. This is a mystical gift. There's no explanation. It's a gift. And we can't say, well, only those who possess the volumes can receive this gift. No, we can't say that because we'd be guilty of broaching into the heresy of Gnosticism. Well, only those who have physical possession of these writings can receive the gift. No. God can give it to anyone he wants.
And I like this is how I took it. You can be in the state of grace, but you don't have to be a saint. You know what I mean? Like you don't, we're this is going to help us become saints, but I mean, you don't have to be really holy and up there in the mystical. You know, you can be like a Catholic who's in the state of grace and wants this gift. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's like for sinners. It's for sinners like me who I'm in the state of grace and I'm not perfect. I'm not perfect yet. But this will perfect us, I would think. I mean, if we have to be perfect to go into the divine will, who's ready? That's how I look at it. I mean, to be in the state of grace, I mean, that doesn't mean you're a saint. It doesn't mean you're perfect. You're in the state of grace. And you might fall out of it tomorrow. But for this time, and I want it, and I'm not a saint. So therefore, I say to myself, well, you're on the road, or you're in the foyer of the mansion. At least you're in the foyer.
Right.
You're inside the door.
Right.
And you want to keep getting closer into the center of that mansion and go into all the beautiful rooms. And so that's your journey. But I don't think, I mean, I might be wrong. I don't know, Peter, you can correct me, but I
Well,
don't
I
think,
think I can't correct myself, but what are you
yeah,
saying?
I mean, I feel like you don't have to be a saint to learn this and to get into it. Like it's
No,
for people
absolutely
like
not.
the average Joe, the average person who wants it can study into whatever God decides to give him. But it's for everyone. I just get afraid that people think, oh, it's for people that are really holy or really, and
Right.
that can be a detriment. It's for all God's children. And the more we pray, the more people will desire it and be interested in it. So I think we have a great responsibility now to pray for those. And like you said, people are just, God can give the gift to whoever he wants. And if you say, I mean, how many people there are in the world? I think he's going to eventually be doing that a lot. That's just my own opinion. But I mean, everyone doesn't have the books. And there's people all over the world. Some people are illiterate. Some people, so he's going to do wonderful miracles, I think, to bring this kingdom here. But for us that have the books, we can read and we can go online.
Oh
I
yeah,
think.
I think those who have been given access to the books, God's expecting us to
Yeah.
read or to listen to them.
Yeah.
Otherwise he wouldn't have made it available to us. But again, just to be clear, because I've heard some people say also, well, unless you have these volumes, unless you read these volumes, you can't receive the gift. That's not true.
No.
I mean, it's stated just like it is right there. One thing, you touched on something too about not, you don't have to be perfect, and that's a great example. One of the passages that I really love, we read an excerpt of it almost every week to nauseam. You'll know it when I say it. But it's volume 11, September 25th, 1913. If you read that entire passage, it touches exactly what you broached on, Maureen. There, I mean, this is the one that talks about that Jesus tells Louisa and to us that he had to do this in such a way that sanctity, this gift of the divine will, might be easy and accessible to all, in all situations, in all circumstances, and in every place. He didn't want it. Again, very easy. Then he goes on to explain. This is really, really poignant. If I'm, I didn't plan on this, but I think it's really good, and I think it accentuates what you just said, which is, I think, is really important. Okay, so he says all conditions and all circumstances in every place. Then he goes on to say, it is true that the most holy Eucharist is center, but who instituted it?
Yeah.
Who constrained my humanity so that it might be enclosed within the little circle of a host? Wasn't that my divine will? My will always have primacy over everything. Further, if everything is in the Eucharist, the priests who call me from heaven into their hands and who are in contact with my sacramental flesh more than anyone else should be the most saintly and the most good. Instead, many are the worst. Poor me, how they treat me in the Holy Eucharist. And the many souls who receive me, perhaps every day, should be many saints if the center of the Eucharist were sufficient. Instead, and it makes one want to cry, they remain always at the same point, vain, punctilious, etc. Poor center of the most holy Eucharist, how dishonored it remains. Then he goes on, if I may, just this is really, I think, puts a flavor to this whole thing. Then he says, on the other hand, there might be a mother who does my will and cannot receive me every day. See the correlation between the holiest, those that are striving for holiness. So, on the other hand, there might be a mother who does my will and cannot receive me every day because of her conditions, not because she doesn't want to. She is patient, she is charitable, and carries the fragrance of my Eucharistic virtues within herself. Ah, is it perhaps the sacrament? Or rather, my will to which she is submitted
That's
that
awesome.
keeps her subdued and compensates for the most holy sacrament. Even more, I tell you that the sacraments themselves produce fruits depending on how the souls are submitted to my will.
That's awesome. I know a
This
lot of young
is for
mothers.
everyone.
I know a lot of mothers now who say, oh, I want to do the divine will so bad. I want to read. And they have like six or seven little ones at home. A couple of them, I probably know five that have said that to me. And I would love to read that to them. They used to go to daily mass. They got married. They were open to life. Now they're home with all these little ones. They can't get out the door. And what volume was that, Peter?
Oh,
That's
this is
11.
volume 11, September 25th, 1913.
That's great. Very good.
I mean,
Thank you.
there's the last six sentences that I don't think I want to do, but just, I mean, it's what tremendous, tremendous.
Yeah.
And I find myself saying, "Wow, that's the greatest passage I've ever read." And then tomorrow,
I
I'll be, "Wow, that passage is the greatest one. That's even better than one I read." It just keeps getting better. And Angelica wrote, "God chooses the least, and glad to be the least." Yeah, we are glad to be the least. I
Yeah.
think that's why we are here, because we are the least.
Yeah.
And then she goes on to say, and this is very true, we should remember this every day. Someone helped us, and we helped the next one.
Yeah.
Someone got us here. I mean, God, of course, is the instrument which made it come to fruition, but he used souls. And again, in my case, in the case of Marysville, it was Deacon John Thompson, who I'm indebted to and gratefully for the rest of my life, which, by the way, is the father of Maureen. Who is the one that introduced us to the divine will? In fact, it's going to be 10 years this October 13th, because it was October 13th, 2014, was the first time I ever heard the name Louisa Picaretta or the divine will from Deacon John Thompson. So 10 years this October, maybe we'll have a little bit of a party, a virtual party online.
My
But,
father shared with me 30 years ago, I had six children running around, or 20 years ago, whatever, I can't remember how long ago. And he shared with me, he goes, "You know how I found out about the divine will?" I go, "No, how'd you find out?" He said, "You told me." I said, "I did. This is when you're sleep deprived, you're nursing a baby, you got a 2-year-old." I said, "I did." He said, "Yeah, you said to me, 'Hey, Dad, there's this priest down in Ebensburg. You should go hear him, Father Celso. I don't know who he is, but I think he's going to say something really interesting.'" I don't even remember.
Wow.
I don't even remember. He told me that the other day. I said, "Oh."
So, do you see this give and take just taking place even in your family?
Yeah, I
I
was in a
mean,
brain fog all the time. I must have heard it, and God said, "Talk to
yeah.
your dad," and I mentioned it, and he went. And there you go.
And that was his start.
That was his start. Yeah.
Wow,
And he
that's
kept
a
saying, "You should read this." And I said, "Haha, I can't. I don't have time." And then I did have time. So when I did,
wow.
you know, so.
Oh, that is. You know, we don't have a lot of time left, but do you have a heartbreak? Are you good for another few more
No,
minutes?
I can go. I can go.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd rather not go further because I think what we ca covered there was really, I mean, food for thought. But thinking about the disturbances, they can be obstacles to the divine will. They can be obstacles to grace. And I just want to point something out, if I may, on our website, queenofthedivinewill.org, there's a page entitled Divine Will Visual Aids. And I have a couple that I brought up just in case we had time for it. If we can just take a peek at it, that'd be great. Let me see if I can remember where it is now. Have to. If I only had a brain, I'd be really dangerous.
Well,
Okay.
if you can't do it, Peter, no one can do it.
Yeah, no, there's something, maybe it's this. Trying to get back to my website. Okay, hold on. No, I had it all queued up too. Okay, I'm gonna get back here. All right, let's go back here, and we go here. Okay, here's on the website. Can you see that? A
Yeah.
book opened. Okay, this is these are obstacles. These are found in the divine will, throughout the pages and the volumes. And these are, again, obstacles to the divine will, things that impede our progress and create that darkness. I think that what Jesus was just talking about with Louisa. And again, we're not going to go through this. We don't have time for it. But it gives us instructions here. And again, these are Jesus giving us. This is not what I said or Maureen said. I mean, we agree with it. We corroborate it. But this is what Jesus said. And it's the meditation, it's God created power, removes the soul from the original evil, all this that's going on. And it also gives us a list. Some are very familiar to us and make sense. And then some we'd say, wow, let me think about that. You know, because I'm sure we may be borderlining on some of these. We may be over the line on a couple. I know I am. So this is just good to take a look at. Maybe use this as a quick examination of conscience before you're go to sacrament of reconciliation. So this is the fun version of it. Now there's another version of this also that's a little more subtle or serious, and that same thing. Okay, this is obstacles to grace. Here you see what I used to do my previous life. So this basically starts off here, and it's very simple, but it's food for thought. Again, all taken from the volumes. So the question is, does the soul accept God's will? And let's say no. Well, then you know where to follow it, and it'll bring you back into understanding more again, because not allowing God's divine will into our lives is just, in my opinion, lack of understanding it. There's no other reason to it. But again, if you do go, then it takes you through there through, and the loving stratagems, anticipate, these are all what Jesus says about purging ourselves, about moving our old stuff out before he can change the wineskin. And then as he changes the wine, because the new wineskin, we believe, is the divine will. And then he's going to fill that new wineskin with new wine. And he saved the best for last, just like at the wedding of Cana. So again, just things to help us along the journey. This one, I did this. I should have done it for the other ones. I actually show you where I obtained the information. This is from Father Agnew's doctoral dissertation from pages 140 and 141. And this was back in 2017. So quite old, but I don't think anything here has changed. But again, just little things that are fun. And one last thing I want to say, Maureen, I really mean this sincerely. I think we have to have a paradigm shift on how we learn. I know I've had to. I don't want to sit at a desk like I'm in school or at university with a book and reading it. I mean, that's nice. If that's all we can do, that's fine. But I seem to thrive better when I take my book and I go to the couch and I bring my tea. Maybe if I can sit near a window. Again, when all the responsibilities are done, not when you're in the middle of things and you're neglecting your family. I'm not saying that. But I just find that when we take this learning out of a traditional environment, I think things start to happen. The unconventional things. See, when you think unconventionally, unconventional means and methods God, I think, will use. If we're going to be conventional, he's basically giving it to us the way we want it. I just find that throwing myself on the couch with a book, even if I read less, I think I gain a little bit more. So again, and we talked about this too, the divine will really is quality over quantity. It's not how much you read, but what you read and what you do it. Saint Hannibal de Francia gave us great advice. He says he only reads 1 to 2 passages a day so that he can fully understand to the best of his human capability what Jesus is trying to say and what Jesus or Mary is trying to teach him. And then masticate it as best he can, because it's in the mastication that God's going to unveil these truths to us. It's not the words that we're reading. And last but not least, that is really interesting too. This was a sort of a discovery I did, but it's really not a discovery. But you know about the controversy, not controversy, but you know about the ambiguities that are with the Vatican right now. There's no errors in the writings, but the Vatican's having difficulty understanding it. And Jesus, he foresaw this, of course, and he said they're going to have difficulty because they're going to try to understand it humanly. And then there was that rumor that Father Annuzzi found errors in Luisa's writings. Well, it's not exactly true. It wasn't errors in the writings necessarily, but Father Annuzzi did find errors in the approach the Vatican is taking to understanding the gift. And the reason why they're confused. And one of which, I'll just give you an example, is they're taking one or two lines and trying to dissect that and understand everything from one or two lines without reading completely what came before it or completely what came after it. And actually, the astonishing thing is that Jesus also hinted to this. Actually, he didn't even hint to it. He gave us a all out he identified it, and I don't have it right now. I had it for the pro. I had it for the program. I don't have it here. But anyway, he identified it, and he said, he actually said the caption was, which was really astonishing. The caption was, the errors contained in these writings will serve good. And I like that because we're all told, and it's true, that there are no errors in the writings. So then how can Jesus say that there are errors, but these errors will bring a greater good? And basically, I can't find it, so I'm going to have to just tell you what it said. Basically, he said that there may be some errors at someone's first glance at something, at a passage. But then after a thorough review, it will then be discovered that it's not an error, but just an error in our understanding. So he called it out, and that's exactly what's happening right now. It's, you know, it's that one-liner that's getting the attention, and it's not enough to bring. Oh, I found it. Do you have time really quickly?
Yeah, okay. Sure.
All right. This is volume 3, January 8th, 1900. And the title is, quote, "The Errors Contained in These Writings, Which Will Do Good." So I'm just going to read three lines about halfway down the passage. Jesus states, quote, "I assure you that they will find not a shadow of vice or anything which is not virtue. Because while you write, Louisa, I myself guide your hand. At the most, they," meaning, again, the Vatican, "they may find a few errors at first sight. But if they look at them thoroughly, they will find the truth." It's exactly the example Father Iannuzzi divulged to us. One of the things he caught was they were taking two lines and they were trying to examine it, and they were getting frustrated because they couldn't explain it. They couldn't understand it. They weren't looking before it. They weren't looking after it. They were not looking at it thoroughly. So Jesus says, at the most, they may find a few errors at first sight. First time they looked at it, aha, error. Well, that doesn't make sense. I can't understand it. But if they look at them thoroughly, before and after, they will find the truth. He didn't say before and after. He just said, if they look at them thoroughly, they will find the truth. So no reason to be worried, upset. It's actually opportunity. Remember, Jesus says in volume 2, faith equals God. We have an opportunity right now to grow, to thrive in faith. Once the church gives its final stamps of approval, some of that faith is going to have to convert over to obedience. We're going to do it because the church says so. Right now, we can do it in faith. And every time somebody was healed, it's your faith that's healed you. When I return, will I find faith? We have an opportunity for faith. Closing remarks, Maureen.
At what time is it? Do we have time for me to read one more thing?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Volume 14. I want you to tell me what you
I'm
think.
I'm
going to
write
this
down. Hold on.
I want you to tell me your professional opinion on this.
I can't. I'm not professional.
I mean, you know, you're professional Marysville guy.
Volume
14, July 10th, 1922. "Now it is necessary that you, Louisa, to rise to heaven and carry with you my divine life, my divine will, so that my volition of the earth and that of heaven may fuse together, and you, Louisa, may live for some time in the womb of the divinity in heaven, where your volition shall be acting in mine, in order to expand it as much as a creature can be capable of. Then you, Louisa, shall descend again upon the earth, bringing the power and the prodigies of my divine will on earth in such a way that the creatures shall be shaken. They shall open their eyes, and many shall know what it means to live in my divine will, to live in the likeness to their Creator. This shall be the beginning of the coming of my kingdom upon earth and of the final fulfillment of my divine will." What do you think of that? Do you think that's
Well, I remember when Father Celso read this, and
yeah.
then he immediately goes into Louisa, she's coming back. And we were a couple people saying, well, how do you say that? Like, and she's coming back. I can take that two ways. Again, I'm just speculating. I mean, one of which could be, yeah, she was given the task like Saint Hannibal. She was going to be brought to heaven, but she was going to go frequently to earth, back and forth, sort of, have these two offices. Is she going to come back in our midst to assist and not be seen, or is she going to come back to be seen? I've heard both opinions. I think right now it's only opinion. I don't know. That may be a question for Father Anuzzi. I know Father Celso believes she's coming back and
Yeah, he
states she's
does.
coming back. Maybe you can ask him, is this going to be physical? Is this going to be metaphorically? Is this going to be spiritual? Is it going to be all three? I don't know. But I know she was given the task similar to Saint Hannibal, that she would be sort of jockeying between the two offices, heaven and earth. And hopefully that's going to be our office as well someday.
Yeah.
That's a great passage. Volume 14, July 10th, 1922, correct?
1922, right?
Okay. Well,
It's always
let me.
exciting to hear something like that. I mean,
Yeah, it is.
it just reminds us that what's like it's so many beautiful things are coming, and the graces that are going to be given to us are have never been given to mankind before. It's remember that, don't look at ourselves as like, oh, geez, I didn't have a very good day, or I was out of the will mostly the whole day. Just look at it as like God's bringing us graces that has never been seen since the garden.
Right.
So
Right. Yeah, and actually
pluck
never
up
been given.
courage. Yeah,
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
right.
Yeah. Well, Mary says, what year did that happen? I think I don't know if you're talking about the year of the passage, it was 1922. Don't look at your May 20. Oh, Maureen, you responded.
Yeah,
20.
I think she wanted to know when my dad went to see Father Celso.
Oh, yeah, we'd love that too. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of little
It
children. It
was in
was
the
probably
90s, though, wasn't it? It was in
it
the
was
90s.
either tw 25 or 30 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember your dad, I think, staying in the 90s, the
Yeah.
early 90s,
Yeah.
which would be there. Wow. So, again, a lot of good. Everyone's got to see, they all have a mission. Everyone has a mission. Everyone's part of a puzzle, piece of
Yeah.
the puzzle. And there's no greater piece. We're all in this together. And we all
Right.
have an office. And I think the important thing is, I think we're all safe when we stay in our lane. I think when we get in trouble, we start to cross into other people's lanes. That's when we start to get bumped around
Oh,
and hit
yeah.
over the head. But
Somebody said today on our cynical, they said, be careful when you have opinions because that's close to being judging or something like that. And I went, wow, that's a good one. It just, keep your head down, do your work. Don't say, well, this is what I, all these opinions flying around out
Right,
there.
right.
And then you end up in the judgment section. We're not supposed to do that. That was a great one for me because I always like to give my opinion on things. And
Yeah.
sometimes it's not, I mean, you're different because you're a teacher, or
I'm not a
you have,
no, I'm not. I'm
well,
definitely not a, I'm a repeater. I'm a cheerleader.
A repeater, right.
I repeat what the what I
Yeah.
hear and what I believe.
Yeah.
Again, everyone's gonna be, I believe everyone's gonna be off the mark slightly. No one's gonna know this perfectly until we meet our blessed Lord in heaven
Sure.
and be taught it. But again, we can't really go wrong with what God has given us. We really can't limit God. We can't say, well, I'm only gonna listen to him, I can't listen to her. I mean, that's, we can have our favorites.
Yeah.
Maybe if we understand it better through one vehicle or one person, that's great.
Yeah.
But I think the problem is, and again, this has happened and it's happening now at times, when you want to align yourself with someone, but then you do it at the expense of someone else. You start to badmouth and
Yeah.
poorly speak about the others. That doesn't,
No, that's not
that's
good.
not, that's not necessary. We can have our favorites. As a mother, they say, well, parents don't have favorites. All parents have favorites. Sometimes we keep it quiet, and sometimes we have two favorites out of four or six or whatever it is. That's okay. And that doesn't mean we neglect the other children.
Right.
Again, so we all have to, we all basically, I mean, if we're on the playground, of the divine will, we all have to play nice. Remember, Adam was kicked out because he didn't play nice. He didn't listen to the rules. We can't get back, we can't get in the same playground and do the same thing. Otherwise, God's not going to allow us back in either. So we have to get to play nice.
Right. We're all on the
And
same team. We are on the
we all,
same team.
that's important. We
Yeah.
all, but see, Satan loves to divide
Oh,
everything, the
yeah.
church, the society, the politics, everything,
Yep.
because with division, this angst, this anger, you've got opportunity for disruptions, obstacles. Don't let these obstacles to grace happen, especially this one here. I like this one.
Yeah,
Some of
this
these
is.
words I can't, some of these words I can't even pronounce, but in fact, my wife put this together. I can't do any of this. So anyway.
That's beautiful.
But it's on the website, queenofthedivineworld.org, and just nice to look at. And if nothing else, you'll get a nice little chuckle, especially with the strike through the hand here. Don't do this.
That's a good one.
So now you know she goes around the house telling me, don't do this. And she's right most of the time, but she's not here, so I can tell you she's right most of the time. But I won't say if she's here. She doesn't need any more accommodation.
Oh, marriage is definitely sanctifying,
Oh,
right?
it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's a privation.
The
Remember?
family and all its, the children, everybody. It's
Yeah.
called God's plan.
We all have an opportunity to overcome our obstacles and the grace not to create new ones. I think that's the key, because there's
Yeah.
enough natural ones out there for us. And
That's
again, we need certain obstacles because, again, without those certain situations, how would we exercise our virtues? We couldn't. If it's a perfect world, how am I going to exercise my patience if there's no reason for it? That's why
Right.
sometimes when I leave Mass, I need that person to cut me off. So
Yeah.
I may say, Lord, forgive them. They know not what they do. I'm at peace. I pray that he gets home safely. Instead of I could be screaming and losing my, can't do that. So again, opportunities exist to help us, not to hurt us. Never. God's never going to put an opportunity in front of us or place an obstacle in front of us unless he's going to bring a greater good.
Yeah.
This is so joyous. This is so great. Thanks be to God. Thanks, Maureen.
All right, thanks, Peter.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, everyone.
Love everyone. And what's next? Tomorrow, Radio Maria tomorrow with Mother Gabriel from
Oh.
Maryville. And the recording will be on for the program that Ken Johnson hosts in his sign, Catholic Radio. The name of the program is What the World Needs Now, how appropriate. And the last Wednesday of the month is a Divine Will Wednesday. So that program will be uploaded soon. But if I get it, I will email it out. But if not, you can just go to inhissign.com and just go into the podcast. But Ken said he would have it uploaded by tomorrow. So that's good news. So Radio Maria tomorrow at 11 a.m. if you're not doing anything. Thanks be to God. This is joyous. And again, we're going to have our obstacles. Opportunity. Just think about that. That'll put a smile on your face. What? Oh, it's opportunity. Okay. Thank you, Lord, for this opportunity. I'm expanding my virtues.
That's right. That's right.
Love
Bye,
everyone.
everybody. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Peter.